Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 279.
This week on the podcast, Puerto Rico is being held hostage by a public utility?
And Florida teens are sick of living under the tyranny of Florida adults, which is fair.
Plus, Trump refuses to shake his groove thing in honor of the Parkland victims.
And after a new round of Russia indictments, Trump is angry at everybody, including Oprah.
Mitt Romney is running to be the Democratic Undersecretary of the Republican Party.
And we are now invested in cross-country skiing. Deal with that.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Happy President's Day.
Yeah.
This is one of the years where you don't want to celebrate President's Day.
I know.
Where you don't want to remember that there's a president. But
yeah,
here we are. It's President's Day.
I have a friend who works for a nonprofit who that like does like LGBT issues. And he told me this morning, he didn't have to go into work, but he was like, I have to make some calls for like some pride parade planning and stuff like that. And I was like, you have to work today? And then I was like, I guess if there was any holiday that like an LGBT group would not be celebrating,
It might as well be
President's Day.
Day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But this President's Day, we bring you news from Puerto Rico.
Sure, yes.
As you would. There are still 400,000 people without power in Puerto Rico, and here's an update. It's about to get worse again. It's apparently going to get worse before it gets better, if it ever gets better there. Because So their power utility company, which has been mismanaged this whole time, by the way, part of the issue that they're facing there is their power utility company is corrupt nonsense.
Totally.
They have been going in front of federal control boards looking for money for like weeks now. A judge has already rejected their request for $1 billion loan. So this week they're trying to get $300 million. But they said,
you know what? I like that they went in high.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they said that they're going to have to dial down power generation starting this weekend, starting supposedly yesterday. I haven't actually read any updates about whether this happened or not because they, you know, are concerned that they don't have enough money, and now they're concerned that the dial down is going to result in people not having access to potable water.
Right, exactly. They're concerned about water.
Yeah. It's too much. So in any case, the judge rejected their request because they said they didn't provide sufficient evidence that they actually needed the money, which sounds like Puerto Rico's power company to me.
Yeah, it does.
They said that the $300 million loan only gets them through like late March.
Jeez.
And
is this just going to be like piecemeal until the end of time in
Puerto Rico,
basically?
I don't know.
Like, are they just like going to regress into a place that just maybe has power sometimes?
People in Puerto Rico, first of all, they already had rolling blackout issues there to begin with. Like they already didn't have the right power.
Right.
Second of all, people in Puerto Rico are complaining that they're getting huge bills in the mail from the power company, even though they don't have power. And now there's like a political crisis brewing because the opposition party has been jumping on this judge's claim that the power company didn't provide sufficient information or data to say they needed the money and condemning them for threatening to ration power as if that's a political control mechanism, which might be. I mean, I don't fucking know.
Who knows?
But so the power company, meanwhile, is reducing employee working hours, I guess, because probably they've been working overtime this whole time. And they're $9 billion in debt. They're operating with an infrastructure that's already three times older than the industry average. And they, as I said before, had already been suffering frequent blackouts. There was an island-wide power outage in 2016 that you didn't even hear about.
Right. Well, and this is why everyone has been wanting them to rebuild this in a way that isn't just fixing what they currently have. Because what they currently have is garbage.
Yeah.
So it's like they need to be upgrading, which is what everyone was sort of hoping that, we would be able to get them to do and be able to help them do.
Right.
Because they
I was
going
to say, getting them
are
to do.
Us. Right. Yeah.
Is one thing.
Right. Exactly.
Doing
helping
it
them to. Right,
as ourselves.
Help, right. Exactly. Yes.
We are them.
Yeah.
So
we are them. Yes. Right. Exactly.
Was hoping we would do.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the governor there is talking about privatizing the power company, which is a classic thing that people are doing in this situation.
Sure.
This is not a way to get a less corrupt power company.
No, it's not.
By the way, guys.
No.
That's privatizing utility never results in that utility being less corrupt.
That's right. Corrupt just, maybe in a different way.
Right. That's,
but
I would argue, like, health insurance is essentially a public utility.
Sure.
It is privatized. It is extremely corrupt in a less transparent way than the Puerto Rican power company is currently corrupt.
Yeah.
That's just not the answer. The answer might be for U.S. taxpayers to fucking fork over some money to hire a real company that isn't like a one-man shop in, Montana.
I know. And this is so upsetting because just because it's upsetting, but also for the last month or so, I feel like we had a real run where every time we led this podcast, it was like 40% of Puerto Rico doesn't have power. And then the next week, it was like 30% right. of Puerto Rico doesn't have power. And I feel like we learned during the Olympics opening ceremonies that 20% right. of Puerto Rico didn't have power, which was, I think, the last podcast we recorded. And then here we are this morning.
The number might be going back up.
What? Come on.
They're not even going to get their Easter miracle. I was going to
say, we were moving in the right direction, guys.
For an Easter miracle.
Oh, God.
It is too infuriating.
Yeah.
Also, to have already had to live with the threat of blackouts this long.
I know. Yeah.
And California knows well what a rolling blackout threat is like.
Brownout.
That's right. California. Yeah. And Arnold Schwarzenegger became our governor over a power crisis.
Totally.
That resulted in constant rolling blackouts. That was a very exciting time in California.
That's right.
We had a political crisis because of the power crisis, yeah. which is exactly what seems to be brewing. That's right. Puerto Rico, but that makes it so hard. It makes it hard to do business. I read an article about how a town that relies heavily on tourism is basically living in squalor at this point because who's going to Puerto Rico?
Puerto Rico
relied heavily on a tourist infrastructure that is not available to them now because it seems like the whole country has only semi-reliable access to power, even if they have power.
Right.
So, in any case, that's a nightmare. Because you probably heard about the school shooting.
You definitely did.
The Parkland, Florida shooting.
This,
though, has been an interesting school shooting for a specific reason, which is it's really the first time that a high school shooting of this magnitude has happened in the age of social media. And it is having a huge impact.
Right.
More so than, Sandy Hook, I think, was the moment where we all just started to feel hopeless.
Right, because it was just so horrifying.
It was so horrifying, and we did nothing.
Right, exactly. But those kids couldn't speak for themselves.
Exactly. They were five. These kids are speaking for themselves, and they're doing it really well.
They are.
They're really articulate. And there was one girl who you probably saw on social media if you're alive. Her name, I think, was Emma Gonzalez, and she made that speech at that Fort Lauderdale press conference.
Great
that was really
speech.
Powerful.
Yeah.
There was Christine Yared is a student, was a freshman there, who has an op-ed in the Times that was the most shared article on the Times yesterday. Like, these students are not fucking around.
Right.
And they've called now. There's going to be a school walkout. There's going to be a march on Washington. There's going to be all sorts of events because these teenagers were like, fuck this.
Kids, man.
Kids.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, it's like how, the 1950s breeds the 1960s. Living in Florida must make you kind of radical.
Well, and that's the thing because, like, part of what these kids are reacting to was – obviously, the horrifying thing that had just taken place, like, days prior. But it was also the fact that, they have two people in Marco Rubio and also their governor who take more money from the NRA than just damn near anyone.
Yeah.
So they were like, this was terrible, but also, like, you fuckers are terrible.
Exactly.
So,
adults in Florida are fucking nightmares.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially in this case, because this was a guy that they had been warned about.
Right.
And so this was the kind of person
that they were warning people about.
Exactly. This was the kind of person that anyone, any state with any minor amount of gun control would have wanted to stop from getting a gun. And in Florida, he was able to legally get an AR-15.
Yep. Like, I mean, come on.
You know what's really sad about all of this is that I now know what an AR-15 is because of all the school shootings that we've had.
I know.
I remember when Columbine happened and my mom was like, the thing that struck her about listening to the kids talk about it was that they knew the difference between semi-automatic and regular gunfire. And she was like, do you know? And I was like, I have no idea what that even means.
You don't want kids to be knowing that.
I now know names of semi-automatic weapons.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to know that information. No. That's crazy. But this was a guy who first of all, had a social media presence that was so disturbing. And he had actually said on his social media, I'm going to be a professional school shooter.
That's right.
The FBI
had been reported. Yeah, he left that as a comment on a YouTube video.
Yeah. The FBI was warned about him.
Right.
But his social media presence included lots of guns, violence towards animals. He'd been expelled from the school for violent behavior.
Wasn't allowed on the school premises with a backpack.
Right.
So,
kids said that they had already joked that if anyone was going to shoot up their school, it would be him.
Yeah. Well, obviously the FBI was too busy dealing with the Russia investigation.
Yes, as we'll Donald Trump reminded us.
Get to in a little bit. But
yeah. Did you see, though, that one of the things that I thought was so weird was conservative media started to report that he was a dreamer in an attempt to, I guess, tie this to nonsense?
I sure
He was not, you guys. Not a dreamer. Sure. Just a regular old American citizen with access to an AR-15.
Yeah.
Right. But so in any case, March 25th, there's probably going to be a sister march in your city. And also, I think March 14th, there's going to be a school walkout.
Yeah,
so if
one
you know
of
any teens.
Right. Yeah, they're threatening a walkout and threatening to not go back until something gets done.
I love a good school walkout.
Sure.
I almost wish I was in high school just so that I could walk out of high school for this, because this seems like it would be a very exciting time.
Yeah.
But if you are of walkout age, I do it.
Do it.
I've done many a high school walkout, and I never regretted it. They always made you sound – the administration always threatened you like you were going to regret it.
Right,
but I think even in this case, the administration also would like guns not to be in
school. I have a feeling, at least at this specific school, the faculty is probably going to be supportive of it.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of places
they
probably
will,
too.
I'm sure in a lot of schools. I mean, how many – like, this must be a terrifying time to be a teacher. Because you might have to protect 40 students from a lunatic gunman at any time.
Yeah.
And you don't know. The other thing that I think was so interesting was I was listening to, in the speech that Emma Gonzalez makes, she references all these things that I remember as consequences of having experienced 9/11 in school.
Yeah, well, she talked a lot about PTSD, actually.
And not only that, but she mentions things like they had a vigil and the helicopters wouldn't leave them alone.
Yes.
I remember after 9/11, and for years, I mean for decades after 9/11, I was having trouble with airplanes, I was having trouble with helicopters. Everyone I know was having that problem. I moved here and I was like, ugh, I'm under a flight path. This is never going to work out.
Right.
You know, like,
there's never not a helicopter over
literally, you just heard one right now.
Times.
Exactly. But so she mentioned things like that where I was like, this is a terrorist attack. They are now victims of a terrorist attack. And that, for some reason, because we've had so many of these and we're desensitized to it, we're not thinking of it, I don't think, on that scale.
No, and we talk about that on this podcast a lot, is that, you know, these things are terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
But we don't ever think of them as such because
it wasn't a crazy person.
Right.
But this is terrorizing.
Yeah.
And they are going to have the consequences of having experienced a terrorist attack, especially one that draws national attention, are different than the consequences of just sort of like something that happened in your school that everyone forgets about, even though I understand that you would have consequences for both of those things.
Right.
But something that is going to have sustained national attention constantly draws you back in, and that's part of the problem. And so they're also going to be experiencing that. There's going to be times where they want to be together, and there's going to be things like helicopters above that they're all going to be terrified by.
Yeah.
So this is like, when we think about how this is affecting children, like, this is affecting children the way that 9/11 affected children. Like, this is that scale, if not worse.
Right.
Because this was a sustained attack on them.
Right.
We were just accidentally in 9/11.
Right, in the area. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That wasn't the same. So this is what we're doing to our kids, you guys.
Yeah.
This is not what you want.
No.
But those kids are really articulate. Shocked by how together they seemed, considering what they had just been through.
Right, and considering that they're going to public school in Florida.
Yeah,
Florida.
Sorry, Florida, but also not sorry, Florida. You guys know you guys know what your adults are like.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You get it. But in any case, if in the aftermath of all of this there was any concern that gun control didn't work, Connecticut actually provides us with a good example, because Connecticut passed much stricter gun control after Sandy Hook. They expanded their existing ban on the sale of assault weapons. They banned the sale of magazines with more than 10 rounds, because as you recall, that was a guy who had access to just like unlimited magazines. They required the registration of existing assault rifles and higher capacity magazines. They required background checks for all firearm sales. They created a registry of weapons offenders, and including those accused of illegally possessing a firearm. And they also imposed sort of temporary waiting periods on people who had some other kind of concerning thing in their background. So, like, if you have a mental health breakdown of some sort, they restrict your access to guns for a short period or something like that. This, by the way, isn't even close to what the gun control advocates after Sandy Hook were asking for. This is just stuff that everyone could agree on.
Right. This is the compromise bill.
Yeah.
Here.
But their gun control measures, their gun deaths dropped instantly.
Oh.
Literally, they fell in half between 2012 and 2016. And Connecticut has experienced in the nation the fastest drop in violent crime over the last 4 years of any state.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Obviously.
Yes.
There's just a connection. The states with the strictest gun control measures have the lowest rates of gun deaths. Those are California, Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York.
Yeah.
The highest gun deaths, the states with the laxest gun control measures. Sure. Alabama, Alaska, and Louisiana.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that is so important here, and again, this is something that we have talked about here, but it's so important to, we have to have this at a national level.
Yeah.
Because the states, some of them are too terrible to get around to it themselves. And also, as places like, you know, Chicago specifically,
and Baltimore
proves,
as well,
is that having very strict gun laws doesn't necessarily do what it did in Connecticut, because if you're near somewhere with much easier access, which is, you know, people point to Chicago all the time, Republicans do, and they say, look at all, they have the strictest gun laws of any city around, and they have, like, so much violent crime and gangs, and everybody's killing everybody. That's because you can drive 7 minutes to Indiana, and it's just like a gun free-for-all over there.
Yeah.
So you have to...
yeah,
we have to do this. Congress has to do something here.
Yeah.
I mean, if Florida can, because these kids basically force their hand, then God bless them. But like, we have to do better, because like Alabama's not going
exactly
to.
Right.
And they'll have a school shooting at some point, and there
and
won't
they
be
will
anything.
Do nothing.
Exactly.
Right. They'll have thoughts and prayers up the wazoo. A lot of prayers.
Yeah.
Very few thoughts, in fact. But
yeah.
But and so this is. Yeah, this is some. There are limits to state-level gun control measures, but what these show is that gun control works. The more gun control you have, the less likely you are to have lots of gun deaths.
Yeah. Well, and this is so important too, because one of the other things that I have loved being seen pass around on social media is a story that I actually think was in the Times as well, and I don't even think it's recent, but was basically just sort of about all of the statistics that prove that easy access to guns is what, in fact, causes massive
Emma
gun
Gonzalez
deaths.
Literally said in her speech, he wouldn't have caused this much damage with a knife.
With a knife, yes. And that's sort of like, you know, we should be doing, obviously, as much as we can about gun control and trying to do everything that we can. But, you know, you and I have joked, specifically like in that blog post that we wrote, that we want government goons.
We
to
joke
go around
about that
and
all the time. It's also not a joke. We literally want that.
I was going to say, and I think it's important to, you know, the thing that sort of like is disheartening, even when you see places sort of like doing some of these gun control measures. You know, we have something like 4% of the world's population, and we have like 40% of the world's guns.
Yeah.
And there are so many statistics that sort of reflect that. You know, we are not necessarily, you know, people sort of like think of us as a more violent people, and we're not really. Like, the amount of, like, you're just as likely to get mugged in London as you are in New York City, but you're something like 40%, which is an interesting number, more likely to die because the person's going to have a gun. Like, they're just not going to in London. And, you know, we can sort of do all of these background checks and things like that. But, you know, one of the things that Republicans love to say is like, well, if somebody wants to kill somebody, they'll find a way. And that isn't entirely inaccurate, because there's guns everywhere. So, like, whether you buy an legal AR-15, wherever this kid ended up getting one, if he wanted that AR-15, he probably could have had it in seconds regardless. So, like, we have to do something about the amount of guns in this country that you can just get willy-nilly.
Right, casually get.
And it helps, too. You know, Los Angeles does, and cities all over the place do this, they do, where they do gun buybacks.
Yes.
Where the local police forces will, like, literally give you a
Someone
Ralph's gift card.
Brought a grenade launcher.
Exactly. And those neighborhoods, after they do that, at least for a certain amount of time, are always safer. Yeah. And it shows up in gun death statistics. We have to figure out not just how to make sure that we close some sort of gun show loophole. Yes, I get that. But, like, we have to, like, literally make some guns just disappear from Earth.
Well, the other thing is that if someone wants to kill someone, I'm sure they'll find a way. They maybe won't find a way that kills 17 other people, though. That's the problem we have here.
Right.
It's like the number of murder-suicides is too high here.
Right.
Because if a husband is being a crazy man, as too many men with access to guns in America seem to be, because it's all fucking men that are committing these.
That's right.
Then they shoot their wives too. Maybe they wouldn't have to shoot their wives if it was a real pain in the ass to kill themselves.
That's true. You know? In most other industrialized nations, they have a much higher suicide rate, and that's not good. But I mean, it's half of the people who sort of would ultimately end up dying in the scenario that you just described, basically.
Well, most of these men are also on a suicide mission.
Well,
these mass shooters are always on a suicide mission. We should be providing mental health resources so that they don't even have to be on suicide missions. I get that aspect of it.
Right.
But we should also make sure they don't take 20 people with them.
Yes.
Who are just random bystanders.
Yeah.
It's like there was like literally that I think the thing that encapsulates the gun issue perfectly is that time that there was a guy with a gun in front of the Empire State Building in New York City and police shot 8 people trying to get him.
Yes.
They didn't shoot him.
No, that's right.
He, I think, took his own life ultimately.
Right.
But just having bystanders and having guns in your presence makes you more likely to be shot, even if you have nothing to do with anything.
That's right.
If a guy is running around with a knife, he has to actually come up to you to injure you.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
In any case.
Yeah.
We should have learned that after Vegas. We should have learned that after the last Florida shooting. This is also Florida's second huge mass shooting in not so long. But I guess it's the first one with teenagers who were like, fuck all of you.
Right.
As they should be.
Yeah. The last ones were gays, so nobody cared about them.
No.
I mean, we did for a while, but...
Right.
And gays still continue
cared about them.
The people of Orlando, or the people of Florida were sort of like able to ignore them.
Complicated because the shooter was Muslim.
That's true. Yes.
This is not complicated. This is domestic terrorism in a way that can't be politicized as anything other than a gun issue.
Yeah.
And so, in any case... I'll see you all March 24th.
Yeah.
Guess what Trump did after he visited... Parkland, Florida, by the way, is 30 minutes from Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
So Trump had to go visit Parkland, Florida.
Right. He did. Went down there. Went through a hospital, I think.
Went through a hospital. Most of the teenagers seemed not interested in seeing him, in fact. There were people who refused to see him, I believe. But so in any case, then he went to go spend his weekend at Mar-a-Lago and went straight to a Studio 54-themed disco party.
Yeah.
According to witnesses, he did not dance.
Oh, very somber.
Yeah, he was in a somber mood.
Mm.
And he also did not do his usual weekend round of golf in honor of the Parkland victims.
Mm.
Very respectful, don't you think? He went to a disco-themed party, but chose not to dance.
That's right.
Out of respect.
Instead, he just sent the greatest string of insane tweets ever, which is apparently... If he's not going to a golf course, that's what he does.
We should maybe let him golf 24 hours a day.
Like, would we have been better with that? I realize it may not have been a good look for him. Like, is this a good PR look for him? Like, but I mean, I think in hindsight, once we get to all of those tweets,
2020.
It seems like maybe he should have just been on the golf course. But
the tweets begin because Mueller issued 13 indictments in the Russia case.
Yeah,
all against Russian nationals, and a trio of Russian entities. For illegal election activities.
Right.
To favor Donald Trump.
Right. Mostly sort of like built around sort of like the information warfare that was going specifically on online.
Yeah.
That sort of was like, you know, trying to sow dissent and confusion with voters. And they also did say that it was sort of like all in to, or it did benefit Trump as opposed to Hillary Clinton.
It was all intended to be to the detriment of Hillary Clinton.
Right. And this was like... This was huge for a few reasons because, like, part of the reason why the right has been attacking Mueller, as opposed to just, I think, sort of being a little bit scared, is that a lot of what it seems like he has sort of, like, either issued, indictments for or, like, seems to be interviewing people for or whatever seem to be, like, maybe, like, only tangentially, it's early, guys, we're recording in the morning, which is rare,
crazy.
Related to the specific issue that he was brought on to do, which was to look for Russian meddling in the election. He's indicted Paul Manafort. We'll get to that in a second because there's updates on that. But that was sort of like, that was in regards to, some money laundering that he did working as like a foreign national from Ukraine. They're all related.
In the White House.
They're all related in ways. But this is sort of like the first indictment, and it was a huge indictment of like the crux of what this whole thing is about, which is were the Russians meddling in our election? And yes.
They were.
Answer, yes. The answer is we already knew from the Justice Department because they've been saying it for months and almost a year, basically, at this point.
Trump's reaction to this was an evolving thing, though, because it begins with him celebrating as if this proves that his campaign had nothing to do with anything because the indictments weren't against campaign
members. It doesn't mention specific collusion.
Yeah. He said, we did nothing wrong. No collusion. And then slowly it became clear as legal analysts looked into the way these indictments were leveled and what the actual language in the indictments was that
this could just be the precursor to the collusion.
And also that the thing I think the thing that actually pissed him off that was the reaction that that actually spurred all the or the comment that actually spurred all these crazy tweets was that it basically shows that he was not legitimately elected.
Well, right.
It,
yes,
it questions
exactly.
his mandate. And that, I don't think he was thinking that initially because he was like, aha, it had nothing to do with me. And it doesn't matter if it had nothing to do with him.
He already had a loose mandate anyway because he lost by 3 million
votes.
Right,
he lost by 3 million votes. But I mean, if he lost by 3 million votes and then also only got those other votes because of Russian meddling, then his mandate, which was already a questionable mandate, is not even legal, really. You know?
Yes.
But so I think that was... The indictment mentions conspirators known and unknown,
which
legal analysts flagged because it says that there's more to the story and they are looking into the story.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, this would make sense as sort of like a first indictment as a sort of like groundwork for, all right, here's what we know the Russians did and, you know, who they were. And that sort of like allows you to set up your sort of like storyline as to like, and next, here are the people who we know were the co-conspirators.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So there's no reason why those had to happen in the same indictment. So
exactly.
That could very well be the next indictment.
This helps create a narrative.
Right, exactly.
Which
yes.
we know the public loves.
That's right.
And actually, Mueller is a genius narrative creator. That's one thing about him.
Yeah.
Is he has been really smart about creating a narrative for this case that has made it very difficult to pick off, you know, to call it political, to sort of pick off indictments and be like, that one's unfair, or, you know, things like that. Democrats were like, see, there was Russia meddling. And we're not crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was nice for them, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also, unrelated to this news, but also in the news this week, was that Mueller supposedly met with Steve Bannon for like 20 hours.
Yeah.
Bannon is on like a destruction tour. Getting into bed with people like Bannon is so dangerous because they will fuck up your shit as soon as you cross them.
Exactly. They don't care about anything.
No, he's a sociopath.
That's
like Trump, he's a sociopath.
Yes.
He's an apocalyptic worldview, so he thinks the world's ending regardless.
Didn't particularly care for Trump before he started working with him anyway, or even maybe while he was working with him.
Exactly.
So
he was giving those interviews to Michael Wolff the whole time.
Right.
Basically
exactly.
calling Trump an idiot.
Well, and there was that piece like in I can't even remember, like GQ or something or Vanity Fair, where he was like, you know, Trump is just a blunt instrument that I'm going to use. And this was while I think that...
This was before he took over the campaign.
I was going to say, So like, he doesn't care.
No.
This guy,
and
Steve Bannon.
You got to be
careful.
He's
a man who wears two collared shirts.
Up to
he does not give a fuck.
Fire and Fury ups the number to 3.
Oh.
That is infuriating. I cannot even tell you how angry that makes me. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But that's
a man not to screw with. And not to trust.
Not to trust.
He's untrustworthy.
He's untrustworthy. If there's anything.
Mm-hmm.
But so, Trump, as the accusations started to mount that maybe this put into question his mild legitimacy in the first place.
His brain really went to
his brain went haywire. And he started rage tweeting. He tweeted attacking the FBI, CNN, the Democrats, Barack Obama,
his own
McMaster,
HR
McMaster, Adam Schiff.
Yeah,
I mean, he really went on a grand tour of his greatest hits.
That's right.
And then I think possibly this might have been related to something that was happening on Fox and Friends. This feels like a Fox and Friends moment.
Probably so, yes.
He also went on a weird rant about Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, because Oprah had done... She was on 60 Minutes. Right, well, and she does 60 Minutes every once in a while. And, like, back in the fall, she had done, like, or I think maybe even the fall, like, right after the election, she had done, like, a round table with people who had voted for Trump.
Right.
And then she got all of them back.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually kind of want to watch it.
Yeah.
But, and spoke to them again last night on 60 Minutes, like, the same people that she had to sort of, like, check in with them now that
see
we're
how they're
sort
feeling.
Of, yeah, exactly. So, he wasn't happy about that.
No.
Trump.
But so, he didn't in any way criticize Russia,
no.
voice concern over Putin's attempts to undermine the U.S. elections, or in any way express concern that there was election meddling that happened.
No, correct.
Um,
yeah.
Instead, he had initially kind of went on an FBI rant about how they had missed the signals with the Florida school shooter because they were so obsessed with the Russia investigation.
I mean, that I almost feel like a congratulations should go out to that one just for
that
its,
was a
like the fact that he was able to
a wacky tie-in.
I mean, really, he, kudos.
That, yeah, he found a connection that,
that
I
no
would,
one,
I would
no
not
other
have found.
Human could have
no.
actually. Yeah.
Then he tweeted that they're laughing their asses off in Moscow. This is the whole.
Yeah.
This is the whole tweet. I'm just going to read the whole tweet.
Yeah,
the tweets
sure.
are getting too long because they expanded the...
I know, but I'm sort of okay with it in certain scenarios.
Says, if it here. Was the goal, all caps, of Russia to create discord, disruption, and chaos within the U.S., then with all the committee hearings, investigations, and party hatred, they have succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. Mm. They are laughing their asses off in Moscow. Get smart, America.
Oh, get smart, America. Maybe that could be his re-election.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of make America smart
Wise
again.
Up. Make America smart again. Then he went and so H.R. McMaster had given a talk about what we could be doing to stop Russia now that we know that they were actually bothering
us. Yeah, right. Exactly.
As I've been referring to it.
Yeah.
And Trump was angry about that because it seemed to suggest that H.R. McMaster didn't remember to mention all the other conspiracy theories about the Clintons.
Right, exactly.
So he tweeted, General McMaster forgot to say the results of the 2016 election were not impacted or changed by the Russians, and that the only collusion was between Russia and Crooked H, the DNC, and the Dems. Remember the dirty dossier, uranium, speeches, emails, and the Podesta company?
Oh, I actually don't remember some of those.
I know. He remembered conspiracy theories that I had, in fact, forgotten about.
Uranium?
Well,
wow.
I know.
But he remembered another conspiracy theory that I forgot
has been
about because
fully
like
fully debunked.
Fully debunked, but also a little off topic. This is what it started. I mean, all of the tweets were insane, but like then he just sort of like then he just had sort of like a stream of like, oh, here are all the crazy things that
I
can remember that Fox News told me happened.
When I went to your Christmas concert and the pastor gave a speech that was first about Christmas and then took a left turn into like weird theology symbolism. This
what
was
at church.
That moment in Trump's world.
Yeah, because then he tweeted, he said, never gotten over the fact that Obama was able to send $1.7 billion in cash, all caps, to Iran, and nobody in Congress, the FBI, or justice called for an investigation. So we got back to that photo of the pallet of cash that went to Iran.
That he believes he personally saw. He personally watched it.
Ooh, yes.
And then he went in on Schiff.
My favorite, he has a lot of terrible nicknames, but this one is
special.
The stupidest.
Yeah. Yeah. Little Adam Schiff.
Right.
Spelled
L-I-D-D-L-E. L-E. Apostrophe.
Apostrophe.
After the E.
Yeah. Which, by the
so
way.
So just little spelled incorrectly with a misplaced apostrophe.
I think he was trying to do. Remember like there would be
he's
those
done this
comics
before,
like Lil Jinx or whatever.
Yes.
And it was
that's
L-I-L
exactly what
apostrophe.
Yeah, that's what he was
he
doing.
He just doesn't know that the apostrophe doesn't go. If you spell the whole word, you don't need an apostrophe.
Right. And he also is not spelling a word.
No, right. Little spelled D-D.
Yeah. Double D.
This is cutesy wootsy way of
yeah, exactly.
saying little. But, finally, Little Adam Schiff, the leaking monster of no control, is now blaming the Obama administration for Russian meddling in the 2016 election. He's finally right about something. Obama was president, knew of the threat, and did nothing. Thank you, Adam.
Right.
So, calls him the leaking monster of no control and then thanks him for that.
That's right. Yeah.
There were also a few other Schiff-directed tweets. And then he went, after all of this, tweeted, I never said Russia did not meddle in the election. I said it may be Russia or China or another country or group, or it may be a 400-pound genius sitting in bed and playing with his computer. The Russian hoax was that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. It never did.
There
except for that we have clear evidence based on the fact that people within his campaign have now been indicted this investigation that they did. But whatever. Then, as we said, Monday morning, went in on Oprah.
Oprah, yeah.
You know. But speaking of the Russia investigation,
more
a little bit of a turnaround.
Besides the indictment from Friday.
Yeah.
Because
Rick Gates,
who was indicted with Paul Manafort, was sort of like
he's like baby Manafort.
Right, exactly. They were sort of, you know, colleagues together, and they were the two that were indicted under similar charges for, you know, all of this money laundering, like, and
because they're, like, in bed with the Ukrainian government.
Right, exactly. So Paul Manafort is still pleading not guilty, and Rick Gates had initially entered a plea of not guilty, and just this week
changed his mind.
Plea to guilty and is taking a reduction in charges and is going to get his prison sentence down to about 18 months, which is much less than it would have been had he been found guilty. And the reason is because he's turning on Paul Manafort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You cannot trust assholes, you guys. Let this be a lesson.
No.
Don't get into business with assholes
right.
and then expect them to have your back in court.
That's right.
Assholes are assholes
yeah.
regardless of the circumstances.
Right.
So.
And don't be the main asshole either. Because.
Because yeah. everyone will turn on you.
Because.
Who because, hasn't because, turned on Manafort?
Right, exactly. Because Bob Mueller is not interested in Paul Manafort turning on Rick Gates.
No.
So, like, by being sort of like the
yeah, don't the be main the head asshole, honcho.
Right? Yeah, it's like that you're the one who everyone turns on.
Yeah.
So that's, you know.
Yeah, well. So this is interesting, A, because it means that they were worried that they were going to be found guilty, which means they did it.
Right.
You don't plead guilty because you didn't do it.
That's right.
And B, that Paul Manafort, I wonder if Manafort turns eventually.
I mean, well, that's what...
That would be so exciting.
I know, right? Well, and that's what everybody... This sort of, like, goes back to, I mean, what he's good at. We've seen other things like this, too, where we've
yeah.
seen sort of, like, people... You know, Michael Flynn is all of a sudden
yeah.
talking now, too. And it's because once enough people sort of, like, start to be threatened with going to prison for a long time, it becomes easy to get them to tell you everything that they know.
Yeah. And so people think Gates probably doesn't have anything that will link Trump, but I think Manafort probably does. And that's where I think this is interesting.
Well, one would think. I mean, he was running.
He was running
the campaign.
While
and he
was an unregistered agent of right, the Ukrainian
exactly.
government.
And he was running it during the RNC. You know, okay. he was sort of like brought in to sort of like make sure that that kind of, you know.
He's a fixer.
He's
a political fixer.
Right, exactly.
That's his life.
So like.
This is, Gates is sort of a nobody to the larger cause of getting Trump, but a extreme somebody to the smaller cause of getting Manafort to turn.
Right.
And Manafort will turn.
Yeah,
if
what
he,
does he
actually
care?
Is going to be caught, found guilty of this.
He's the man who was working for the Ukrainian government.
That man is going to, yeah, he's not afraid to turn.
No.
He's no. not too busy to turn on everyone.
No.
So this is interesting because this really puts the pressure on the guy with the information.
That's right.
This is it's not good news.
It's
quiet, but not good
yeah.
news.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, carpetbagger alert.
That's right.
Mitt Romney declared.
Former Massachusetts governor, Mitt Romney, running for Orrin Hatch's
right.
Senate seat
native,
in Utah.
Native Michiganian.
That's right.
And
yes.
former Massachusetts governor Mitt
yes.
Romney.
Yes.
Run for Senate in Utah.
That's
He's
right.
just running to be the head of Mormonism. Like, can just any Mormon run in Utah?
Yes.
That is unfair.
No, it's not.
That seems crazy. The people, there are other people in Utah who deserve to be represented for their Utah-related needs. And this is not how you do it, by getting the Massachusetts governor.
Yeah,
but some interesting
whatever.
Things happening here.
Yeah.
He, first of all, is still harping about his fucking Olympics organizing experience.
That's where, that's his.
Nobody
yeah.
cares.
Right.
I know that that was in Salt Lake City, so that's your
right.
only claim to relevance in Utah,
yeah.
other than that you probably own 12 homes
he
there.
He saved those Olympics in his narrative.
In his
anyway.
Narrative of the Olympics. He's the only person on earth who cares about that
sure.
story, but whatever. He's running kind of as a Democrat, though, which is what's been interesting about this whole
yeah.
thing. He's listing that developing health care that covered all people in Massachusetts
yeah.
as one of his
accomplishments.
Which is
fascinating because he ran to be the leader of the free world by attempting to forget that he had done so.
Correct.
So.
He's talking about how Utah welcomes immigrants. And so
oh, yes.
like he's running on a very pro-immigrant platform.
Yeah.
It's confusing to say the least.
Yeah. Which isn't totally, I mean, it's confusing, but it also...
It's not totally confusing
no,
because
but,
he's also the head of the anti-Trump caucus within
right?
the Republican
but it's,
Party.
It's interesting, though, in the sense that Utah is deeply red.
Right.
You know, he's not running for the governor of Massachusetts again.
Right.
So I don't, maybe he hasn't gotten a memo out of Utah
well, I
since
have
2002.
A feeling
but I mean,
to myself.
You know, because he's
is...
running for Orrin Hatch's seat, and Orrin Hatch has been one of the biggest defenders of Trump
yeah.
in the Senate.
I have my own theory, though, which is that, because Utah's also, remember, Evan McMillan almost won their primary.
That's right. That's
Utah's
true.
A little bit of a wild card.
They are,
and
yes.
I think that Utah is not as deeply red in the, because Utah is also a place that largely because they all practice a wildly
sure.
crazy religion together, is actually pretty community-minded in certain ways.
Right. They're conservative, but they're not, like, they're not Alabama conservative,
right.
necessarily.
They're, in the, fundamentalist in a different set, in a different way.
Sure.
A slightly more moderate in certain ways way, because
sure.
they're not like believing in, like they're not rapture people, you know, like they're not
right.
thinking the world's going to end.
No,
but,
no, they're magic underwear people.
They're magic underwear people.
Yeah,
but,
they have bigger imaginations.
Exactly. They have big imaginations in the Mormon church.
That's
I will give
right.
them that. I read
yeah.
a history of Joseph Smith at one point.
Yeah.
And it was one of the more fascinating things. I
that's
highly
right.
recommend
yeah.
reading about the history of the Mormon church. It's fascinating.
That's right.
And very imagination heavy. So in any case, my point is that I think Utah, unlike a lot of deeply red states, is fairly community-minded because they all have to kind of stick together because they literally were founded as a colony for a religion that no one wanted. And so I think that there are things in the Trump imagination that probably are making them question themselves a little. And I wonder if, as a person who's in the Mormon church, Mitt Romney knows something we don't about discussions that are happening inside the Mormon church.
He might.
About maybe this being too much.
He might, yeah.
Because I actually don't know any Mormons that are as deeply read as we believe Utah is.
Right.
I don't know tons of Mormons, but I know some Mormons.
Sure.
I grew up with a few Mormons around scattered. Yeah. And sure, those were New York Mormons. Right. But there's Mormons in California, too. Like, there's ex-Mormons, especially.
Especially.
That is not... I just never get... I don't get the impression that Mormons are looking... Are, like, Trump-style crazy. I mean... Depends. Are they a kind of crazy in the sense that many people belonging to weird renegade churches are? Yes.
Or mainstream. Or mainstream
non-renegade churches. Absolutely. But like this is like a unique thing that I bet kind of bristles them a little bit if they were willing to literally have the president of Utah.
That's right.
Be Evan McMillan.
Right. You know? Yeah. So true. Yes.
So in any case, I'm curious to see what happens. Here's what I will say. If this works, could they not just elect a Democrat?
I know, right? Well, the one that, like, it's has made me feel good about where we are as a people, that he has seen it as a good idea to be reminding everyone that he gave everyone free healthcare.
Yes. Yeah, if we could go back to Republicans touting how that was their idea in the first place.
Right, exactly.
How the Obamacare system is a Republican, a Heritage Foundation plan from the 80s.
Was Romney care.
Right.
Yeah.
Then I'm for it, because then we can start talking about single payer on the left and forget having to defend this nonsense system.
Yeah, he didn't give them free healthcare. I misspoke there. They were certainly still paying for it.
Paying to private companies, as always.
Right, yes.
Meanwhile, we have an exciting conspiracy in the California governor's race.
Ooh. Is really something.
And it's a Clinton conspiracy of all things.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not a Clinton conspiracy. Well, it involves, tangentially involves Clinton. And that is enough for us, I think.
Yeah.
So there's this woman, Amanda Renteria.
Renteria. Yes.
She was an aide to Dianne Feinstein. She was an aide to Debbie Stabenow. And she became the national political director of Clinton's 2016 campaign.
Right. So she's like, she's kind of like a big deal in terms of sort of like, you know people who work in politics.
Right.
Like, you're not going to have heard of her like as a,
you're not a rando who's heard of her.
We hadn't heard of her either.
But she apparently filed paperwork to run for the California governor this week.
Right.
And that is interesting for a few reasons. One being that California is, as you might recall, the fifth biggest economy in the world.
Yes.
And too big of a state to run for governor in 4 months.
Right.
Because in 4 months we have our primaries and we have jungle primaries. And so you have to be well known to Californians to get out of a jungle primary.
And we also have huge, forces in the race already.
Yes.
It's not like people were, it's not like she entered the race because there was sort of like a clear opening that people were clamoring for.
Exactly. We have Vera Rugosa, we have Gavin Newsom,
But that's it.
That's it. Those are the two big.
And that is where the conspiracy theory potentially lies. Mm-hmm. So she made this campaign announcement. She didn't. Right. It was found out basically by accident when the California Target Books, noticed that she had filed with the Secretary of State's office, and then he like tweeted it out, and then like now she's like not taking phone calls. Her voicemail is full. She tweeted to Politico that like she would like basically like get back to them. Like she's just not saying anything. She has no money.
No money. She has not been fundraising. No political apparatus. California Democrats, including the head of the Democratic Party, is like, I don't fucking know.
Huh?
And Eric Bauman, who's...
And they know her. Like, so it's not as if they
Amanda
were like,
certainly
who is this?
Has my phone number, and she didn't call me and didn't tell me.
Yeah.
But Gary South, who is a Democratic strategist who worked with Gray Davis, was basically like, you don't do this.
Yeah.
California, it's too big of a state. It's too expensive of a state to run in.
Yep.
She's completely unknown. She has no campaign. Like, did she win the lottery?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what he said. He said, you have no staff, you have no consultants, you have no endorsements, and you don't... Oh, wait, no, where? So I was going to read this. He made some statement.
Yeah,
I don't know how she plans on...
Oh, this was somebody else who said it's strange unless she won the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes this month.
But, so, the only people who have ever heard of her outside of, like, Washington inside political circles are people in the Central Valley, because she ran in 2014 and got her ass handed to her trying to unseat the Republican in
David Valadao, yeah.
In the congressional race there. So that is where people are starting to think, oh, well, this is very interesting, because that is an area that Villaraigosa is expected to do very well in.
Right.
So there are people who are working with the Villaraigosa campaign specifically who have said that she is basically has entered this race as like a pawn of the Newsom campaign.
Like a spoiler.
To like siphon off Villaraigosa votes in the Central Valley. Which is like,
it's hardcore here in California.
Yeah.
We don't fuck around. Especially because since we have a jungle primary system, the general is likely to be between two Democrats. And Democrats are likely to be Newsom and Villaraigosa.
Right. And right. Exactly. Newsom is leading in all of the polls. But obviously, the scariest person to him to run in a general against is obviously Antonio Villaraigosa. He would rather run against any of the other Democrats or any Republican. Like, the toughest head-to-head matchup for him is Villaraigosa. And so he's basically, what it seems like the theory is anyway, is that he's trying to get Villaraigosa out of the general election by causing someone else to come in second in the primary. That seems like a reach. But,
I know.
But
anyway. I'm in for a conspiracy theory.
Same.
I mean, I'm not going to fuck around and pretend like I'm too good for a conspiracy theory.
Right?
Especially, jungle primaries give you so many conspiracy theory opportunities because there's so many people running all the time.
And especially in California, they're all Democrats. So it's like everybody from the same party like trying to figure out like what sort of nefarious way they can do to like end up running in the general against who they would prefer to be running against.
It's a terrible idea, but also amazing.
Yeah.
So in any case, we're going to keep our eye on that because of loving the drama.
Yeah.
And now we're going to talk about the Olympics.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you were only here for the politics, get lost.
No, that's right.
There was a brief kerfuffle yesterday where it seemed like Adam Rippon was going to switch sides and start working for NBC as a commentator immediately to finish out the Olympics. But then he found out he would have to give up his standing as an Olympic athlete to do it. And he was just like, no.
Couldn't do closing ceremonies like with the rest of the team and like couldn't be sort of like I'm assuming he could go to Olympic Village, but like,
he couldn't continue to be Mariah Nagasu's roommate and hang out.
Right, exactly. Well, and that was the other thing too. He was like, my teammates were here for me throughout the entire week. So I want
to, I also can understand if you work your whole life to come to the Olympics, like it's nice to have someone throw cash at you, but also like, this is the experience he worked his whole life for.
Right.
Like
let
him finish out the Olympics.
And people are going to continue to throw cash at him.
Exactly. He's going to be a star when the Olympics end also. So 24 hours after the initial announcement that he was going to be joining their team, he was like, never mind.
He did do a segment yesterday that was basically just an interview. So maybe that was what they decided on after it sort of, he learned that he couldn't really do what they were hoping that he would do, where he did a segment where he answered Twitter questions the other day. And if you haven't watched it, I
highly recommend.
Can't recommend it even as... There's no way I can recommend it enough.
Yeah. All right.
So please
do that.
Please
tonight is the ice dancing finals.
That's right.
I'm a big ice dancing aficionado.
I am too, but I am continually, and I always thought this about ice dancing anyway.
Right, back this is
when,
the deal with
back
ice dancing.
When the Russians were just sort of like winning everything seemingly arbitrarily, I had a moment during last night's,
scoring fiascos.
Scoring where it just reminded me that ice dancing is just not a real sport, really,
it's
necessarily.
Judged on feelings.
Exactly.
It's as much of a sport as other sports in that it takes the same athletic skill.
Right, exactly. And I get that and ultimately am fine for it. I just feel like we should, take away the guise of, some sort of, I said to you last night, I was like, there are green dots appearing up there as if a technical element has been completed meaningless skating about. And I'm not saying that skating about is not difficult, and I'm sure also, yes, very technical.
Right.
But, I just, the French team who's in second place has won the last couple world championships, so they have, a certain sort of pedigree. And she skated around, awkwardly for the entire time, trying to make sure that her dress...
They had a wardrobe
malfunction. That she didn't skate naked, and he almost fell out of his twizzles, which is the only technical element that is recognizable to any humans, and they're in second place.
Yeah.
Like, ahead of many people who, and I get that they're sort of like, quote-unquote, skating skills are better, and they look like they're gliding across the ice, but, let's just be judging on what we, if we're only judging on what is beautiful.
Right, on our
and
feelings.
What your feelings are, then weird skating, making sure your dress doesn't come off, is also not beautiful. So, like, I just have, I have a lot of ice dancing problems. I enjoy watching it, because it is beautiful, and right. That's why you do watch it. But, like, I just, I want to take away any sort of, like...
I have a new technical element that I keep an eye out for that has been tremendously helpful to me in terms of understanding why teams are scoring the way they're scoring, which is noticing how close their skates are during how the step
skates,
sequences.
Right, and I know, and speed and, like, deep edges and knee bends. Like, I know sort of, like, general things to look for that can separate, like, a good team from a not good team.
The one thing that Tanith Belbin said that was helpful, aside from most of her other comments, which
she's
were
terrible.
Not helpful, was she said, as the Italian team was skating, because I enjoy the Italian team, I think they're adorable, she said, you'll notice their edges aren't as deep. And as soon as she said it, I was like, that is absolutely correct.
Sure.
The French team, even with her dress falling off, had deeper, more confident edges. Their feet were closer together. Like, it was like miles ahead.
Yeah.
It was just the issue of the dress really created a complicating factor a thing that is judged usually just on feelings.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
I also maintain, we disagree
on
this.
But they got a high level of, they had a high grade, a GOE, if you will.
Right, grade of
on execution. Those twizzles that he literally almost face planted on.
I know.
So
when
I
feel like I, in a sport that is judged on feelings, don't have feelings for the American team that is in the lead.
Well, that's
true. I caught multiple times where I thought that they might have tripped.
Right.
And
yes.
I
like her just because I like her. She's got a high level of face sassing that she does.
A lot of face.
And
she does
and that's
a lot
what
of face.
And that is, I realize, also not a technical element.
Yeah.
But like,
well, it's dance.
But
it's
that I was going to say,
element.
That's why I like them.
Yeah.
So, but I get it also, too.
Yeah, I just sort of like, every time I watch them skate, I'm kind of like when Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir skate, I literally, if I'm like, kind of only absently watching and I'm like answering an email or whatever, I will stop what I'm doing and be engrossed in their skating for the entire length of the program.
Totally.
And I often feel that way with the Shibutani they're not twins. I keep calling them the Shibutani twins because someone else did that. The Shibsibs as well.
Yeah.
And I even do, like, I even with the French team in non-wardrobe malfunction situations, same thing. Like, you cannot stop watching.
Well, I certainly couldn't take my eyes off of that because
that's
true.
I was found
hoping
it
against hopes that something
very
dramatic
easy
was
to
going
stop
to
watching the Hubble, Donahue and Hubble, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know what their names are. I've never seen them before.
I call them the Blondes. I've been calling them the Blondes.
And I don't think, is he even?
I
think it's just her.
It's like I can't even see them. In any case, I'm annoyed that. I'm annoyed that the score, because they were scored almost identically to the Shibsibs.
Yes, Shibsibs. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I was just like, this is not fun to watch.
Right. So. And like 5 points behind the wardrobe malfunction team.
Right. Who was, everyone should be behind Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir.
Of course.
They continue to be the best.
Yeah, I'm not mad at them.
I was even team them when the Americans were actually winning.
Sure.
When it was Davis and White.
Right.
Because I still find them a little bland to watch.
Sure.
But in any case.
Well, and also he has upsetting hair.
It's the worst. Also, he's married to Tanith Belbin.
Yeah.
So it's like, of course.
Ugh.
They are the Blondes.
They're the Blondes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, that we wanted to update you about before we go is the experimental film in the form of a newspaper article that we were able to feast our eyes on this week. There is a New York Times article I highly recommend you read if you're in the market for a mystery. That
it's not intended to be a mystery.
It's entitled The Ski Pole That Norway Will Never Forget.
That's right.
And that sort of sums it up in a way. It's sort of a sick joke played by Norway on the rest of us.
You and I had one of our better
exchanges about this.
Exchanges via chat about this. Because you sent it to me and I first started reading it and I read like two sentences and I was like, well, I'm not reading this.
Right.
But then somehow
you kept reading.
You do.
Right.
Read it.
You read the whole thing.
And then
you read it again.
And then you read it again.
Because you're like, what did I just read?
And then you are left with every
question.
Human emotion and question, but yet also
none of
completely
them.
Emotionless in a way that it's all just, I can't even, it's shocking.
No, I can't describe.
Explain it as best you can.
So
because I don't
the
know
article
the
is about
words.
An iconic moment in Norway sports history.
Right.
Which, unsurprisingly, takes place during a cross-country ski race.
Right.
Only Norway would have this be an iconic moment.
That's right.
But similar to how you can ask people in America where they were when they found out JFK had been shot.
Right.
You can ask Norwegians who were alive in 1982 where they were when this specific sports incident happened.
Right.
The sports incident being that a Norwegian skier tripped another skier from Russia.
From Russia,
broke
right.
his ski pole.
Somebody broke his own ski pole.
Broke his own
not
ski pole.
Russians.
Right, not the Russians. The Russian fell down.
Right.
But broke his own ski pole. Someone from the crowd just ran out and gave
right
him
next
a new
to him
ski pole.
That was the same length as his own ski
right,
pole.
Right, which is an important detail of the story that I would never have cared about.
Right.
He skis off. The Russian eventually catches up to him and they wind up tying.
That's right.
But for some reason, the where were you when Bra broke his ski pole question is like the epitome of Norwegian sports trivia.
Right. Like the anniversary of it is celebrated. The
There are
the
statues news, to the guy.
The newspaper there does like a feature.
Right.
Like where like a where were
where
you when
were.
Where people share their stories of what they were doing.
The guy
when they
himself
saw this
is still
race.
Alive and says he gets asked about it like 10 times a day.
Right. He's also friends with the Russian guy who's like mysteriously right. not mad
well,
at him for knocking him over.
There but. Are things that are mysterious about it. One being that it's clearly, it's a story of redemption for the Russians more than anything.
Right.
Because they come from behind after being tripped.
Right.
And
but if you tell that to a Norwegian.
They get real mad.
Just like, that is, the Russian side of the story is not a side of the story
that they want to hear.
They're all
but there is
in.
Something so Norwegian about celebrating a tie that they should have, that they had the advantage for. That
right.
I just can't, I like, there's something so Norwegian. It makes me both really understand what has always confused me about Scandinavia and also understand nothing about anything.
Right.
And so I took it upon myself to look at, to watch the race. Because I was
yeah,
just like,
right.
this
you
is making no sense
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, you went down a real rabbit hole.
I went down a rabbit hole. The once I watched the race, I still was just watching a cross-country ski race where something minorly exciting happened at the end, but nothing that would make you think, yeah, Norway did it, or yeah, Russia
right.
did it. Like, no one did it. It was just like a weird moment
no
in
doing.
Sports history. But the, first of all, if you look it up, the all of the titles, it's all in Norwegian because no one else cares about this,
no.
but all of them have like 1,000 exclamation points. Like, it is truly the most exciting thing that's happened in Norwegian sports history.
Yeah.
And the announcers really sell what is the least exciting moment. Like, the Norwegian announcers really sell it.
Nice.
Like, and it's also in Oslo, the race, so, like, the crowd is really fired
sure.
up. And, like, it's a very exciting race finish, as
okay.
race finishes go. It doesn't
sure.
say much about the Norwegian sports prowess,
yeah.
though.
Well, it's like I said to you, like, any close finish of a race, whether it's on skis or on foot or a horse
yeah.
or a
car,
dachshund
whatever.
Race or,
right.
you know, it doesn't, so like,
right.
that
races,
can be exciting.
Close finishes are exciting.
Right? So.
But so in any case, I took that with me. I've been sitting on it for days. I've told everyone I know about it.
Yeah.
Everyone has felt similarly sort of baffled by the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because part of it also is that.
It's a story that you read and you feel, this is, I feel like what's important about the story is that you read it. And the reason that you have to read it a second time is because you feel like you are missing the one
right.
most important fact that is like the crux of the whole thing.
And you weren't.
And you weren't,
it's
and it
there.
Doesn't exist.
It's a news article that has all of the pertinent information to describe the event that is available and yet describes nothing.
That's right.
I described it, I think, accurately as feeling like a weird European experimental film.
Yeah, I was having like moments where I, like upon second reading, like was imagining like basically like being in some sort of like alternate universe where like I have sort of like different like human feelings
yeah.
than like and the people who are of the same
I think that's what Norway feels like.
I was
I think
having
that
like
is
a,
what it's like to be
right?
Norwegian. I think I've understood.
I was having like a Mandela effect moment basically.
Yeah.
You know,
I was
like
having
where
like
you
an
sort of
existential
like,
crisis. It's one of the more existentialist
right.
sports history moments.
Right. Like the
ever.
Norwegians are definitely remembering how you spell the Berenstain Bears differently than I am.
Right, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
like that's
exactly.
Yeah. Because it just, I can't process it.
No, yeah, it felt like you were being punked.
That's right.
Or it felt, as I think I also said this to you, that it felt like we were being punked, but in the most Norwegian way possible.
Right. Yeah.
In any case, as a result of this, I took a new interest in cross-country skiing. My grandfather actually had always watched cross-country skiing, and he was Swedish, so this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I suddenly took a new specific interest in the Norwegian side of the cross-country skiing
sure.
story. And there, the next night, or last night, a few nights ago, yeah. whatever, a few nights after this, the next night after I watched the race, it was yeah. a, it's been a process. I watched the women's ski relay, during which Norway had a very exciting comeback. Sure. And I was at the edge of my seat for a full 10 minutes, which is longer than I've ever been at the edge of my seat for any race in history.
Yeah. That's more stress than you usually allow yourself to feel at voluntarily. Any
time. I know. And then after that, the men's relay also had an exciting finish. Both finishes involving Norway.
Yeah.
I finally understood what it was to be excited about cross-country skiing because of this article. And I couldn't tell you what the process was because, again, the article describes a not exciting event
right.
that you don't get. So it was a process.
Yeah.
But I finally just like something clicked for me and I am suddenly really invested in cross-country skiing.
Well, I can't say that I also went there with you.
No. Well, you haven't watched the clip. I think if you watched the clip, you would understand the level of emotion that had gotten injected sure. into this. Because that was the thing that I think was lacking for me is a dry New York Times article about it. You're sort of like, I have no frame of reference for cross-country skiing. It's one of the more boring sports at the Olympics. I don't right. even get why it's a thing.
Right.
In an era where people are skiing backwards down hills and doing flips. Like, right. what is cross-country skiing?
Right.
But as soon as you watch the clip, you're like, oh, this is like the, you know, this is the Michael Phelps sort of right. swim. This is the yeah. moment where skiing becomes exciting.
Yeah, well, this guy is like Michael
you.
Jordan there.
He's, yes. I mean, he's like a huge the guy. Deal.
Yeah.
He was also not that decorated a skier before this. This is his one achievement, was tying a Russian guy in this one race, which was literally like the Nordic cross country ski championships or something. It was a yeah. regional cross country ski race, yeah, essentially. That's
right. Yeah.
But he's like a rock star there.
I mean,
but only in Norway.
The Olympics are a regional cross country ski race.
Well, yeah, all cross country ski races are regional.
It comes down to the
right.
those
People
countries.
Are cross country skiing yeah. in Mali.
Although the Tongan guy.
Did not place last.
He beat four people, I think. Oh, another thing in regards to cross-country skiing that I learned.
There's a lot.
Is that, yeah, I know. We've learned more about cross-country skiing than probably I wish I could unknow some of these mm-hmm. things. But got a lot of his qualifying points
yes.
from roller skiing.
We've learned a
which
lot
is
about the qualification system.
Not just exists, but is competitive yeah. in a way that allows you to qualify to ski
in the
on
Olympics.
Snow in the Olympics.
It's...
Guys.
Madness. Everything, first of all, I don't even know what a roller ski looks like, but I know that it can't be as long as a cross-country ski.
No.
Because you would never be able to keep the ski from snapping.
That's right.
It just doesn't...
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
and no, that's the
really
news.
Doesn't. That's the news. And you know what, guys? If you are not Olympics fans, I have a feeling you might be instead... fans of the Bachelor Winter Games, which is counter programming that's going on ABC right now.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to offline with you about that because I've somehow managed to find time to watch 4 hours of that this week. So that might be a sort of sad commentary
on
my life.
In offlining with any of you about
but,
that.
But I'm here for you if this Olympics conversation that we just had about cross country skiing
means nothing.
Did nothing for you.
Right.
So but feel free to tweet me or send us a Facebook message. And
if you're looking for an existential crisis, read that New York Times article.
Exactly. Yeah.
It'll do
everything. It'll make you question everything.
Yeah. And that's the news. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.